five girls and one boy. That's quite the family. And I'm just wondering, tell me about the family, because with five girls and one boy, what did the boy end up doing?
Well, the boy ended up being a doctor, which is good. He's a more of a scientific doctor. In other words, he has a doctorate. My parents had five girls, and the boy came at the end. And so people obviously thought that they kept trying until they had a boy. But they kept having children because they were Catholic. And back in the day, in the 60s, there was a lot of pressure from the Catholic Church for women not to use birth control and to have as large a family as they could possibly maintain and manage.
Cut to today. Growing up in a family that huge, what's your learning about who you are and growing up in a family that big?
I think that we spent a lot of time in our own little bubble. I think that perhaps my social skills of reaching out to other people are not as effective as they should be, because I got very spoiled by being around the people that I knew intimately very, very well, and we were all on the same page. The other people I get along with really well are military. We call them military brats, and we don't take offense to that. It's because we all lived the same life. We lived in one place for no more than 3 years, often two. I lived in 10 different places in states in America. And then in 1972, my father got stationed in Germany. It was always my parents' dream to move to England. And the Air Force said, all right, take this tour of Germany and we'll see about getting you to England. Well, then we had to do 2 years in Holland. Not had to, it was great, it was wonderful, we loved it. And then in 76, the Air Force fulfilled their promise and me and my family moved to the United Kingdom on a military base called Feltwell in Norfolk, England, in the middle of nowhere.
What year was it you actually moved to the UK?
1976, we moved to the UK, and it was a year of a huge heat wave. So we thought, well, this is, what about the rain and all that? This is fantastic. We were washing our cars and washing the dog and playing with the hose, and the police came by and they said, there's a hose pipe ban. What are you doing? We couldn't believe it. Thought, this isn't.
And then you learned what the UK is really like shortly thereafter.
What I learned is it's a wonderful place. But they do have some weather, but I actually like the weather. I like the rainy days sometimes more than the sunny days.
No, let's talk about Mama's cooking. Okay. Tell me about some of the, because I know the whole digression, and again, that's all in the bio and other interviews, so we're not going to go through that. But do you remember a couple of the cover songs that you, because I know that you were kind of that band that really was playing all these military gigs, right? So when you're playing a military gig, is that a lot of Louie Louie?
When I was 16 years old, we decided to put together a band that would serve the GIs on the military bases. And we knew what kind of music they would want to hear, and we thought a good title would be Mama's Cookin', because all these GIs, they missed Mama's Cookin'. We thought it's perfect. And we did Linda Ronstadt songs, Foghat, Foreigner, Eagles, ZZ Top. We did Steve Miller songs. We put together a country band, and we took all those songs that we did, and we just gave them a twang, and we called the band the Country the Double E Country Band, because we thought, well, it's a way to get more gigs and make more money. And all of these clubs always had a country and western night. So we would just put a twang in the songs, play them a little bit slower, and the Double E Country Band was born.
Katrina and the Waves, when it came out, it didn't sound, in that time, it did not sound like any other band that was out there. I mean, obviously going down to Liverpool, you know, had a very, I mean, the guitar twangs in there and everything else are very reminiscent of certain 60s things. It didn't sound like, when I got it, and I remember getting that record, what actually was in the water in when you were thinking about it that led to this? Because you and Kimberly obviously had a point of view that wasn't necessarily parallel to what everything else was doing at the time. And that's why it stood out.
Kimberly Rue was predominantly the main songwriter of the group, although Vince Delacruz, the bass player, wrote Do You Want Crying? Kim heard my voice and he tried to fashion songs around it, like a song called Que Te Quiero. Don't Go South of the Border, I'm in Love with the Boy Down in Mexico. Vince was my boyfriend at the time, Vince De La Cruz, and he fashioned a lot of stuff around me, you know, biographically. And we brought so many different influences to the table. I mean, Kim was nearly 10 years older than me, and he was not that interested in my influences, which was Linda Ronstadt, Emmylou Harris. I loved Mama Cass Elliott, and I loved, you know, Elvis in Vegas, and, you know, I loved the Partridge Family. You know, that's where I was coming from.
Me too. I own all their vinyl. I still do.
Yeah. And Kim came from a place, it was the Stones, The Who, The Faces, The Beatles, obviously, and we kind of met halfway on the girl groups in the 60s sound, and we loved the Velvet Underground, and we started swapping records, and I started becoming interested in more of an edgier, kind of a punky thing, and I bought Patti Smith Horses and just used to listen to that to death. I had all the Blondie records. I loved that. I was listening to a lot of women at the time. Chrissy Hynde, of course, was way, way up there. And then I listened to a lot of the girl groups and Dusty Springfield, Heart, Pat Benatar, any women who I just thought were great singers, and I just sang along to try and figure out how they did it, figure out how I could be a singer.
I wonder if people are aware that you've really never stopped performing. Blissland is kind of a, you know, it's a where you are today. You've talked about, I want to talk about a little bit because it hasn't been written up that much yet, that this really is back to your California roots in a huge way, is it not?
It is back to a Southwest roots. Blissland is the name of a village in Cornwall, in the southwest of England.
Right.
And the photographic work on it is a beautiful beach called Watergate Bay in Cornwall. And Cornwall is a place that feeds my soul, that when I need some place to go to remember what life and the world is all about, away from the craziness, it's the place where I go. And so I drew on that for inspiration. I drew on that place for inspiration. And it was interesting for me writing it how many references could be, could also work for California. And being here tonight in this beautiful mountain winery, there's Blissland is written all over it. When I was invited onto the Retro Futura tour, I had to act very quickly in putting out some material. I had about 2.5 weeks to write the material, and then about three and a half more weeks to get it recorded. And so it was very, very quick. I didn't know what the songs were going to be about, where they were going to come from, what I was going to talk about. And I think you're right. I think what came out is it's very West Coast, and that's the stuff my parents listened to, and that's the stuff I first started listening to. So it finally got a chance to come out.
You put Farmer's Song on there, and I get this big smile, and I say, you know, this is a woman who's making a record for two reasons. She's making it for her audience, but she's also making it to tell her audience some things about who she is and how she feels, and also wants to challenge them.
Farmer's Song, I remembered a situation in around 1985, 6, whatever. When was Live Aid? Was that 85? Live Aid?
Yeah.
It was 85, wasn't
85,
it?
Yeah. Yes.
I went out to my parents' farm in England, and I said, did you watch Live Aid on the TV? Wasn't it incredible? Wasn't it incredibly moving? Did you give anything? Did you phone up and donate anything? And my mother said, are you kidding? You know, the hay's still out and it's starting to rain. Or, you know, look, Katrina, you save the world because I got my hogs to feed. And so this is a real story where my parents were in effect saying it's a real shame. And I know I'm part to blame, and it's so sad, but it's too bad. But I got to feed my hogs first, and then I'll save the world. And I just thought, some people just don't know about the world, you know? We know about the world because we got a TV. It ain't been switched on since 1963. I'd ponder some answers with this old brain, but the hay's still out, and it's starting to rain. And I thought it was hilarious that my parents had that take on it.
So what's the learning from that, do you think? Do you think we've learned anything today, or you think it's not really any different in the long run in the way we communicate?
I'm always disappointed that so much of the social network seems to be bringing out the worst in people. You know, it's people feel as if they have carte blanche to get on the internet now and be nasty. And I don't follow, I don't do anything on Facebook or the internet, and my phone is out of the ark. You know, my manager takes care of all of that stuff and keeps me informed, but I don't read reviews, and I don't really, I just do my thing and just get on with it and try and just spend the time that I would be spending looking at, Googling myself or whatever, looking at a tree or taking a walk or getting in touch with beauty.
So if I come to London, can your doggie take me on a tour?
My little doggie's called Peggy Lee.
Peggy Lee loves London. That's my way of getting into it. I think that's just so fantastic and so much fun.
London, where I live now, is a wonderful place, and I wanted to share a lot of the places that I love with people. The book helps you cut to the chase. Where should we go for a cold Guinness? The Toucan in Soho. You can follow along and take my advice and go to these places, because I won't let you down. And in Soho alone, there are loads. I can tell you where to have the best pint of Guinness or the best cup of coffee or the best French patisserie.
And isn't that so much better in the long run than going on Yelp and having 7,500 people try to advise you and trying to figure out who you actually like and know? Isn't it so much better to have a friend or somebody that has a modicum of taste? Because if your fans trust you and you've not let them down with music, you're probably going to give them your point of view, and you're not going to let them down. It might not be the Indian food that they love personally, but at least they're going to learn something from somebody that's direct communication.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun to have a book. It's really fun to take the little book around with you, and you can take the journey with Peggy Lee, because she's in every shot. She's represented as the, she's the model. And I thought, well, I could be in it, but it's much more fun to have her in it.
You're quoted as saying that back then, back in the day, that it was kind of dangerous to come out. And that's intriguing to me, because, again, I was surrounded by so many people that it didn't matter one way or another. But I do know that my art director, when I was in advertising, when he would come to work, and then we'd meet in Provincetown, he'd go, do not tell anybody we met down here. So I know you've been deeply involved, but I'm intrigued about that quote.
It's a wonderful time for people now to have the freedom to come out and the freedom to express themselves without the condemnation. There just wasn't the opportunity to come out back in the day without condemnation and without rocking the boat in such a way that would upset the record label, would upset the other members in the group. You know, it just wasn't mentioned. It just wasn't brought up. It just wasn't done. And you have and had loads of women in the music business in the same situation. You just didn't feel as if you were in a safe place. It was a big leap, let's put it that way. And my feeling about it at the time was, if the rest of the members in the Waves weren't comfortable about it, then it was going to stay under wraps.
So I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs on the outside is the bread. Mm-hmm. And then I play the rest is solid music without any interruption. So people tune in and they literally hear 30, 35 minutes of nonstop music. And there are no rules.